Thank you, Alyssa. Our next speaker is Mimi Sherlock. Mimi is the Global Director of Strategic Insights for Flavors with International Flavors and Fragrances. And so Mimi is, she's a Nebraska girl who turned to a Jersey girl. So who do you think her favorite rock and roll artist is? Bruce Springsteen, yes, exactly. So, Mimi Sherlock.
Okay, hi everyone, thank you very much. So I'm gonna talk a little bit about how context plays into the effect and understanding consumer response here. So my job at IFF is really about understanding this statement, the idea that consumer needs are shifting in a way, you know, so rapidly that really hasn't been experienced before. And for us at IFF, our job is to design taste experience, right? And so our challenge is, how do we design this great taste experience in a world where, for example, a lot of our customers have told us they're really going to this vision of having absolutely no flavor on the label, right, from a clean label perspective. So as a flavor company, you might imagine how that makes us kind of stand up and pay attention. That's everything that we do. So we need to figure out how to understand this and what clean really means and what the future is for clean label and flavors. Because this is so important to us at IFF, we've developed an entire innovation program all around this idea of what we call Reimagine Natural. And the whole purpose behind this program is to do research to help us understand a natural, organic, label-friendly taste design that truly is crafted to do both things, to give consumers and give our customers what they want. They're an ingredient label that meets their desire for trust and transparency and health and everything else that goes into kind of this driving force of why consumers are looking for clean label products. But of course, again, the challenge is what's most important for consumers at the end of the day when they eat and drink? What do we know that's one of the most important things to them? What do you guys think? Taste, right? It's got to taste great. So that's the challenge. So we've gone about understanding and doing some standard approaches to understanding what consumers think about clean labels and specific ingredients. And we come up with a lot of the same findings that our customers come up with. Certainly we know that consumers are not looking for artificial flavors on the ingredient label, right? That's something that artificial words certainly cues to them. This is not really something I'm interested in. I'd rather avoid anything that says artificial flavor. But unlike what a lot of our customers are telling us, is that what consumers want is no flavor on the label. And what we find over and over again is not necessarily true. What we find is that when you put natural flavor on the label, consumers are pretty much okay with that. But the bigger picture is that, you know, what does this future world look like with clean labels? And we want to be more part of the narrative to help say, well, it's not really black and white, right? You know, what you pick up and eat when you're have an on-the-go occasion and you're snacking might be different from what you want on that label or what's important to you on that label when you're eating something for a very different reason around nourishment and health, right? So we needed a way to very quickly understand what do consumers truly think about different ingredients in different contexts, because we believe that context had a huge effect. And really, we've proven that's absolutely true. This is when we decided to partner with Insights Now and their Clean Label Enthusiasts online community as a way to get some what we think is more truth around understanding what consumers are really wanting and how they're reacting, and really getting that truth in a pretty rapid way. So the clean label enthusiast online community that Insights Now has, and we became a founding subscriber of that community. And in this online community and with their methodology, we truly have the voice of the consumer entering into these debates about what's okay for clean labels. With this methodology, what we do is we're looking at very specific end products, very specific products, and we're talking to consumers that consume those products, right? Those products are important to them. And those consumers are telling us when and why they eat those products, and they're really thinking about those specific moments where they're eating a product, and then we're presenting them with different ingredients, and we're asking them a very simple question. We're saying, are you okay with this ingredient, or would you rather avoid this ingredient? And again, this is with that whole experience that consumers are thinking about this very specific product and moment or the way they're going to use that product. And we get an answer. The thing that's a little bit different about this methodology is we get what we call a clean label score for each of these. And this score is based on really two different types of measures here, a System 1 measure and a System 2 measure, right? The implicit and an explicit measure. So when we're getting this score, we're not only understanding what the consumer says about accepting or avoiding this ingredient, but we're able to time how long it takes for them to make that decision, right? Is it just kind of a quick from the gut, yes, this is an okay ingredient, like honey, for example. We find that when honey is on the ingredient and you ask consumers about it, they don't have to think about that. Just very implicitly, they say yes, of course, very quickly. Honey's fine, honey's great. I'd love to see that on the label. If you give them a very chemical sounding ingredient, they might very quickly say, absolutely not, no. And they don't even take time to think about that. It just looks chemical. Maybe they're not familiar with it. They're also going to give you a very quick response, but that answer is going to be they'd rather avoid that. And then there's ingredients that kind of fall in the middle. So that's really what this score is based on, is both of those types of responses. And what we do is we find out what's a fast response for each consumer. Right, so they do a very simple test about picking, for example, three numbers from a list of numbers, and then we simply ask them, was this one of the numbers you picked? Yes or no, right? They can very quickly give that response. And that ends up giving us the baseline for what's a quick response for this consumer. Does that make sense? All right, so we're getting this measure. It's adjusted for every specific consumer, and now we're really able to know what their answer is. And we're able to take those answers and calculate what we call a clean label score, right? So again, basically what we have are responses that fall into one of these four buckets, right? It's this ingredient's okay, and very quickly I can tell you that. Very System 1, implicit response, okay. That'll get a very high score, a clean label score. Right? In the red, that's again the very fast no score. That'll be a very low, translated into a very low score in the end as a clean label score. And then on the bottom of the chart, you'll see these are more the ingredients that consumers had to think a little bit about. Whether they say yes or no, it's a more rational response, right? They had to think about it a little bit. And so those scores are going to fall in the middle. So basically, these clean label scores are calculated from 0 to 100, and we can really start to get an understanding of what does this ingredient really mean? What process are consumers using to get their response? And what does that mean for us in terms of what ingredients we know are no-brainers? Maybe we want to accentuate or talk about those because they're in our product. What ingredients, there's no way you can change a consumer's mind because they just have a very automatic no to that. And what ingredients fall in the middle that maybe they need to be explained a little bit more, or maybe there's a way to influence consumers to help them understand more about those ingredients to either make them more acceptable or just change their response. So basically, if you think about all the data collected, you're going to get a scatter plot, something like this, that kind of overlays into this response. And again, those scores, those average scores, are turned into what we call clean label ingredient scores. So we take all this information, and we have a way to have access to all different types of studies, of food groups, of different types of not only flavor ingredients, but sweeteners, of texturizers, acidulants, all sorts of different types of ingredients and different moments of use. And there's a really nice dashboard that that we work from that allows us to mine data in so many different ways. Like I said, we can look at clean label score comparisons by food categories, by moments of use, by demographic segments, by shopper behaviors. So there's a lot of information that's included in the dashboard here. So what I wanted to do is just focus a little bit about the idea that we're talking about here, and specifically about context. Like I said, as a flavor company, a lot of our customers have been coming to us and just saying, you know, our vision is no flavor label, you know, within 5 years. And we're saying, well, I'm not sure that really makes sense. I'm not sure that's doable. I'm not sure the products that you're going to create are going to be very well liked by the consumer if they don't taste good. So we think context matters here. We don't think it's a black and white. And so we've used this methodology to help validate that idea, that yes, indeed, context does matter. And if you're just black and white, or if you're just doing a simple survey, or just kind of saying, well, we're going no flavor label, total clean label, it's really not that simple. Context does matter. It makes a difference. And by understanding that, we'll be able to build better products together. So for ingredients, the most concerning context effect is the compromise effect, right? So that means that acceptability of ingredients are going to be different based on the context in which they're seen. So in this case, let's just think about different types of salts, right? So depending on what food category or what end product you're asking about, and you ask people about salt and salt on the label, they're going to have very different responses. And in this particular example, the way you both name salt and different types of salt variations that you might include in the label have very different responses. So again, if you look at this chart, what we're showing is, for example, sea salt. Right? Sea salt has a very high clean label ingredient score, up in the mid 80s there. So again, sea salt, kind of like the honey example, for most consumers, that's something they see and they automatically, without thinking about it, think that that's an ingredient that's very acceptable on a clean label. You look at, you know, you go down from there, mineral salt, smoked sea salt, then you have just salt, potassium salt, yeast extract, and then you get down to sodium chloride, right? So does anyone find that kind of interesting? Yes, shaking your head, right? So if you ask them about salt, there's one response, right? And salt is you know, has a, again, depending on the food product, it's going to be different, but a 60-ish score. And you ask about sodium chloride, which, of course, is the same thing with a different, more chemical-sounding name, and it drops down to being clearly very unacceptable. So naming matters, and as I'll show you, so does the food type, and the context really matters here. We did a study specifically looking at soup, all different types of soup. We asked consumers about not only the different types of soup, whether it was a dehydrated soup, a canned soup, a frozen soup, a freshly made soup from scratch, but we also asked them very specifically about the reasons why they were eating the soup, right? Are you eating soup You know, when you're eating soup purely for comfort, a lot of people eat soup because it's a comforting food. It makes them feel good. Maybe when they're sick, maybe when they're stressed out. But it's kind of a feel-good food that people eat for comfort. People eat soup for convenience. People eat soup really for very specific health reasons. People are eating soup to kind of add it to a meal for extra nourishment. And many times we're eating soup simply for pleasure. Right? So if you look at, in this case, we wanted to point out, we know that there's trade-offs consumers are willing to make for the label, you know, what they're willing to accept in a label, depending not only on the food category, but for the specific reason they're eating something. So in this case, we know that consumers are willing to make some trade-offs for convenience. Right, almost everything that we ask about for the chicken flavor is okay on a food label when it's for convenience, and then that drops a little bit when they're eating soup specifically for health. So really, when they're eating soup specifically for health, clearly stand out by far is chicken stock is really what they're looking for, and natural chicken flavor drops a bit for health, but it's just fine for convenience. And you can see that trend go down for organic chicken flavor, chicken bouillon, and then chicken fat isn't something that's very appealing to anyone for an ingredient on soups, but it's drastically you know, more avoided when you're eating soup for health than it is there for the others. So just an example of you know, we're really trying to truly understand what the trade-offs are, what this looks like, both by food type and by kind of need state or the reason people are eating something. So again, we all know this, that is with most things, who you ask matters, right? The acceptability of an ingredient might change based on the context of the consumer demographic. So we go back to our salt example, and it turns out, probably not a big surprise, that when you ask consumers about sodium chloride, there's a little bit of an education context effect here, right? We know that it's a little bit more acceptable for people that have had a little bit more education, and that drops depending on the level of education you have. Most likely, these are people that have a lot of familiarity. They know that sodium chloride is the same thing as salt, and maybe as you get lesser in education, that might not be something that's readily or quickly apparent to people. We know that there's regional differences. This is an example of sweetener scores, right? So sweeteners, not everything, you know, there's not a context effect for everything by region, but sweeteners we found do have some context effect by region. And if you look at the Midwest versus the Northeast versus the West versus the South, you can find that different sweeteners might be acceptable in different regions. And again, depending on how you're doing your product targeting, knowing this, especially when you're formulating for a product, can really help you to see what some good alternatives are and how consumers really perceive and think about different sweeteners for different regional product launches. Beyond demographics, we know the acceptability of an ingredient might change based on the consumer values. At IFF, we have a value segmentation that we use called Choice. And this is a segmentation that helps us understand consumers really in five different value segments. We have people we call super achievers, we have people we categorize as control freaks, we have good friends, we have seekers. So we look at these people, and the way we're segmenting them is really based on their values, not specifically across any demographic. And we find many times that we have bigger differences with this type of segmentation versus any demographic that we look at between age or gender or anything else. So this is very valuable for us as we help our customers pinpoint and target the consumers that are actually buying their product or how to attract a different segment that aren't currently buying their product. So what we've done is we've overlaid this segmentation on top of the clean label enthusiast community to get even deeper understanding of who these people are. What we find is that a lot of clean label enthusiasts, right, these people who are very much reading labels for everything, the label's very important to them, tend to be what we call super achievers, and very disciplined people. We have a segment, we call it Control Freaks. And so a lot of the clean label enthusiasts share these values. And there's other value groups that we found in the clean label enthusiasts group, what we call traditionalists and seekers. And there's big differences between these people when they are scoring different ingredients. So we can see again in our salt example, mostly, we find these differences between trending between the super achiever and control freaks versus the seekers and traditionalists. So again, just another layer of insight. Our goal is to really understand, you know, the truth and as much as we can about these consumers. The acceptability of an ingredient might change based on the context of shopping and the retailer consumers shop at. We can look at scores, again, different sweeteners, depending on the retailer consumers shop at. And we find some differences between people who shop at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, Aldi, Target, Walmart, or Kroger. Again, another context effect to understand. So just a few examples I thought would highlight this idea that, first of all, having methodologies like this where you're assessing both system one and system two thinking, and of course controlling for context, which we know has a very powerful effect in our research design, really does add a whole new dimension of insight that we know can help not only our flavorists and our product developers, but certainly companies who are making clean label decisions and help them to make even better decisions by really kind of understanding this at a deeper level. Okay?